Up North News with Pat Kreitlow is a product of Courier Newsroom and has a joint sales agreement with Civic Media. Enjoy.
Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. Up North News with Pat Kreitlow starts now.
Well, here we are, and good morning. It's Thursday, August 18th. Welcome to our little coffee break together. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Luke Mathers is here at 8:15. Political analyst Joe Zepecki on the new Marquette poll. Tomorrow, Carolyn Fiddler, a national expert on state politics, will join us live from the Netroots Nation convention going on among progressive activists out in Pittsburgh. And Luke and I cannot really commiserate here about the Brewers last night. I was working late on a host of other things, keeping one eye on that goose egg on the scoreboard. It stayed no runs for the Brewers until the bottom of the eighth when they plated their one and only run. They wasted a very nice start by Eric Lauer, who gave up two solo home runs, but I mean, nothing through the first five innings. It's just that the Brewers didn't score anything for the first, you know, seven and two thirds innings and ended up losing 2-1 and they win this afternoon. But I, like I said, I only caught that out of the corner of my eye and Luke missed it entirely because he was looking to, again, as the world's most passive aggressive radio producer, rub it in that I don't have knees any longer and he could play volleyball till late into the night, despite having a morning radio shift.
I went home and did work afterwards too, though, because I had things I had to finish up. But I did get out onto the court. I enjoyed a nice game of volleyball. We were competitive the entire time, but some of the volleys didn't go our way last night. And I was also keeping a close eye. Taylor is fast. The only reason the Brewers weren't shut out last night was because he's fast, he got to home very quick from second on that base hit, and I guess I can just, that's the only thing we can really good to say about the crew last night, outside of, like you said, it was a good start by Lauer, but...
Look, they have that's what makes this so frustrating. We're not, you know, caterwauling about a baseball team that sucks. All right, we're upset about a baseball team that has the tools. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not telling you that this team right now could, you know, win a World Series with those tools. I'm telling you they can be much more competitive than they are and much more interesting to watch. They were, you know, fascinating to watch. It used to be one of my favorite activities before we started the radio show was to just plop myself in the recliner and, you know, keep an eye on the game throughout the evening. And now I barely catch it out of the corner of my eye because, you know, we're just not seeing the fireworks that they're capable of.
Yeah, I saw the statistic that over the last nine games, the Brewers have only given up 27 runs total, which is it was pretty solid. But the problem is over those same nine games, the team only got 18 runs. So it's like the pitching is not the problem. The pitching's pretty good. We're just not taking advantage of some of the good starts that we get from our pitchers.
Right. No, the bats have been heroic at times, but we need more of the workaday type stuff. So as I mentioned, Joe Zepecki coming on shortly. There's a lot to digest in the new Marquette poll for us to talk about. Mandela Barnes with a healthy lead, Governor Evers and Tim Michaels running neck and neck. And wait till you hear the division on issues, how Democrats versus Republicans rank, how they prioritize the issues that face us today. And it's no wonder because so many folks on the right side of the aisle have a rather skewed version of things. It's the kind of thing that leads them to still buy into the fairy tale about election mischief. It's what allowed Michael Gableman to be able to have a phony investigation last for this long. And that's where I want to start with a few moments of Wisconsin sense to say that next time Republican politicians want to go on a fishing expedition, do us all a favor and just come on up north here and cool your jets for a while. Your last fishing expedition cost us taxpayers a whole lot of money, and there were never any fish to catch. As said in the Journal Sentinel, former Supreme Court Justice Michael Gableman's taxpayer-funded review of the 2020 presidential election, quote, accomplished nothing, according to a Dane County judge who on Wednesday put some final nails into a coffin full of nothing. Gableman never produced any evidence of substantive voter fraud, wrote Judge Frank Remington in a decision related to an open records case against Gableman. The judge noted Gableman didn't keep weekly progress reports as required by the assembly. He conducted no formal witness interviews. He gathered, quote, no measurable data over at least a four-month span in 2021. The judge said, quite simply, there is simply nothing there. Instead, Remington made more comments that were part of a ruling denying a motion by the assembly office that the judge should recuse himself over presiding over this public records dispute. In response, Judge Remington admonished Gableman's offices and their five out-of-state attorneys for their baseless claims, and he revoked their ability to represent the assembly in future cases. He wrote, its lawyers' arguments are wholly without merit, and together their disobedience for the rule of law is contemptuous. He called their case a, quote, fever dream version of the facts of the case, in which the office, quote, never even bothers to invent an explanation for why the judge is supposedly biased. Gableman's office claimed 761 pages of record were too strategic to publicly release, but apparently a lot of those documents were mostly blank. So this is what you and I paid for, a fishing license that cost $1 million. They spent all their time talking big at the bait shop, but never doing any actual reeling in because they knew it was all about having a big, loud engine on a big boat designed to impress some very small people. Gableman was fined $24,000 yesterday, but you and I will pay that, not him. A very expensive fishing license. Joseph Pecky joins us next. You're up north. You can get our daily newsletter by signing up at upnorthnewswi.com. You can also reach the show 715-388-7155 or radio at upnorthnewswi.com. I wanted to conclude our last segment with a comment from Mason Becker on Twitter, who noted that other than Senator Kathy Bernier and very recently Speaker Voss, has a single Republican Wisconsin legislator spoken out about the train wreck investigation that they forced on Wisconsin taxpayers? I couldn't agree more. And if not, why? That's $1 million wasted. And they're, frankly, a free messaging to the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. There should be a ton more messaging on how much money could have been wasted on Foxconn, money that would have been spent up in the district on roads and other things. We're talking about a Republican Party always going on about, you know, waste, fraud, and abuse, when they're the ones committing the waste, the fraud, and the abuse. So, you know, let's hop on that and really start pressing Republican legislators around the state about why they're not saying anything about what was clearly, like the judge said, nothing. It was a whole lot of nothing. Joseph Pecky joins us as we have him on occasionally to talk about politics of one form or another. He writes some great analysis articles for us at upnorthnewswi.com. How are you this morning?
I'm okay. How are you doing, Pat?
I'm all right. You know, every time it's funny because, you know, we will tell journalists, you know, don't get caught up in the horse race. Yet we always, you know, enjoy seeing new data. We enjoy seeing new polls. So it's not that you're supposed to be anti-poll. It's just put it in perspective. So the things we're going to talk about today, you know, are a snapshot in time. These are 811 registered voters that were interviewed August 10th through the 15th, margin of error of 4.2%. And Joe, the thing that people are talking most about is that Mandela Barnes has opened up a 7-point lead on Ron Johnson, 51-44, while Governor Tony Evers and Tim Michaels are in a statistical tie, Evers leading 45-43. Really, it's more that Michaels and Barnes got a bump coming out of their primaries, and that this is all probably not anything like what the final vote totals will look like in November, do you think?
Well, what I think is increasingly true is that we should take every single individual set of numbers that we see in terms of public opinion research with a truckload of salt. Mm-hmm. To me, the value of public opinion research at this point in a state where we know the politics are just 50-50. They just are across the board when it comes to competitive red team versus blue team elections. So to me, it's more about kind of checking the mood. And what I took away from yesterday's Marquette Law School poll were a couple of kind of top lines. And the first is that progressives, Democrats are more united than Republicans, than conservatives are.
Yeah, no surprise there right now.
You would rather be a House united than a House divided going into a midterm election. Number two, former President Trump still kind of looms over everything and in a way that is not helpful for Republicans. He is an agent of chaos, and that chaos kind of hangs over our politics in a way where he can cause even more problems for Republicans any single day between now and election day, given how unpopular he is.
And I think it's worth noting before you get to your third point. I mean, this is a guy who lost Republicans the House, lost Republicans the Senate, lost Republicans the presidency, and it is entirely possible that he is going to lose Republicans 2022 before all is said and done. So your point is perfect. I mean, he is, you know, an agent of chaos.
And he's a loser baby, right? Yep. And so, and we'll come back around to the numbers, but to my, the third sort of thing is, this is a political environment that is growing more favorable for Democrats at a good time. No one should misunderstand midterm elections for the party controlling the levers of power, many of them in Washington, D.C., tend to go poorly. And there have been a lot of moments in this past year where you go, wow, this could be a really bad fall for Democrats. And listen, it still might be if people right. don't get out there and vote. But at the moment, the political environment is improving for Democrats. So those are my three takeaways. Progressives united, people are fired up and energized. We've seen that enthusiasm gap shrink. You know, Democratic enthusiasm is up 9 points. That's a good thing if you're a Democrat. Conservatives are divided. Trump remains a problem for them. And the political environment is growing more favorable. Those are my top three takeaways. And now I'm happy to chop it up kind of inside the numbers.
Sure. And the first one that my eye was drawn to, and I'll admit it was drawn there because of a quote by Charles Franklin, the poll director. But you look at the question, does candidate, you know, X, does this person care about people like me? And in the case of, say, you know, Mandela Barnes, 50% say yes, he cares about people like me. 27% say no. For Ron Johnson, this is 41% said yes, he cares about people like me. 49% say no, he does not care about people like me. I mean, that's an amazing spread. Then over on the governor's side, Tony Evers cares about people like me. 54% say yes, 38 no. For Tim Michaels, 38% yes, 38% no. And so this is the quote from Charles Franklin, is that means there's 23% of the people about Tim Michaels and, coincidentally, 23% of the people about Mandela Barnes who don't yet say they don't know enough to answer the question, does Tim Michaels or Mandela Barnes care about people like me? And that 23% of voters in both cases could very well decide the election, or you'll tell me I'm looking too deeply into just one set of numbers.
No, those characteristics, those traits are really important. So what these numbers tell me is that Wisconsin voters are ready to fire Ron Johnson, that after 12 long years, you know, a big broken promise and more conversation about mouthwash and VAERS data and Hunter Biden's laptop than anybody would have imagined 12 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
Voters have decided they're over Ron Johnson. there's a lot of work to do for Lieutenant Governor Barnes to sort of fill in the rest of his story and make sure that voters understand what he's about. But he comes into this, you know, against an incumbent over 50. Wow. But there's no question that these numbers are more about Ron Johnson than they are about Mandela Barnes at this moment in time.
Now then, comes the usual disclaimer, of course. The only numbers that ever, ever, ever mattered to Ron Johnson happened in 2010 and in 2016. Much like Trump in 2016, terrible poll numbers. But as long as they can get enough of, you know, people that support them to show up compared to the other candidate, none of this matters. It really comes down to who's showing up, not how they feel today.
That's exactly right. And flipping it to the governor's race, you know, this is an electorate. This is a state that has decided. They kind of understand that their governor was dealt a raw hand. They tend to like him. They're not sure about this new guy. And that's what the next 82 days are going to be about. You know, Governor Evers has some strengths built in on those same characteristics that you just mentioned relating to the Senate race. The governor is plus 16 in terms of, you know, cares about people like me. He's plus 9 in terms of shares my values. His job approval is 47 approve, 41% disapprove among independents, which in a 50-50 state like this, where the two bases both have a lot of enthusiasm, that, you know, independents will be determinative. So they've decided, you know, I think voters are ready tomorrow to fire Ron Johnson. And they're not sure if they can get any better than Tony Evers with Tim Michaels. So there's a lot of work to do and reason to be cautious in both races.
I think that there's also something apparent here in whether it's frustration or anger. And my own interpretation is that a lot of that is, you know, frustrated Republicans, but I could be wrong. One of those markers is that after you look at the governor's race with Evers at 45, Michaels at 43, there's an independent candidate who comes in at 7%, which I didn't even write her name down. I've never heard of her. I am a consummate consumer of political news. And I haven't heard of this independent candidate who somehow got 7% of the respondents to say, that's my choice. It says nothing about her. It says everything about voters looking for some way to express their frustrations. And unfortunately, a lot of them do it with third party candidates who have no chance to actually win for them.
Well, and just utter disdain for our politics, which is not like a crazy notion at this point in our history. So a couple other just top line takeaways. I mentioned Trump looming over everything, a problem for conservatives. I want people to understand, this is a guy who could announce he's running for president any day. And every Republican strategist in America is screaming and pleading and pulling on his coattails and trying to stop him from doing that because he is so deeply unpopular. And does anybody think that the tightening noose of legal problems and the FBI raid of Mar-a-Lago, does anybody think that makes it less likely that he's going to run for president and announce today or tomorrow? Of course not. So here are the numbers. Trump has a 38% favorability rating, 57% unfavorable. He's the least popular politician in this poll. He's underwater by 19 points, and he's underwater by almost 30 points with independents. So the fact that Tim Michaels is so aligned with Donald Trump, and as those 23% of statewide voters who aren't very familiar with Mr. Michaels get to know his association with Mr. Trump, that's going to be a problem for him. I think we may have some room for this on the backside of the break, but the other thing that people need to understand about Mr. Michaels is how out of step he is on one of the top issues in this election. 88% of Wisconsinites support abortion exceptions for rape or incest, including 71% of Republicans. You know who doesn't think there should be those exemptions? Tim Michaels, Republican nominee for governor.
Those were stunning numbers to see. And again, the number for Republicans and the 87% for independents who want to see that exception for rape and incest. Michaels is going to, he's going to bounce around. He has already. He has flip-flopped. He has, you know, removed Trump's endorsement from his website, then put it back on. And I think that he's going to be that kind of a flawed candidate. And these numbers are, I think, are only going to make his campaign put it more in disarray. Joe Zepecki is with us. We're going to talk more about the poll and other issues of the day. Coming up on the other side of this break, you're up north.
You're listening to Up North News with Pat Kreitlow.
It's a very good choice in tunes there of Mama Told Me Not to Come, as we was asking Joe Zepecki, our guest earlier, why he's not at the big Netroots Nation convention. And I was so glad that he gave me the correct response. We're of a grumpy old age now. We just don't go. It's getting to be on par with I would never join a club that would have me as a member.
Oh, boy.
It's more comfortable sitting here. Although you saw me running away to refresh my coffee, and I'm finding with this radio show now, I'm sitting here a lot more, and so my coffee gets colder faster. So now I've already put out, this is my official putting out the call. Anybody needs a gift for me, I'll take one of those coffee mug warmers, you know, that you can leave on your desk.
I got one of those for my better half a few anniversaries, birthdays, or Mother's Days ago. I've lost track. They work great. Like, you should get one.
Well, there you go. Hints made, everybody. Wink, wink. Joe Speck is joining me to talk. We're talking primarily about the Marquette poll, but also, you know, some of the significance of the numbers. And when they got to issues, you know what? I'm sorry. We were talking about abortion and the repeal of Roe v. Wade before the break. So let me wrap up on that. When it comes to whether people, you know, agreed with repealing Roe v. Wade, only 30% did. 60% opposed it. And then when you looked at how people felt abortion should be legal in all cases, most cases, illegal in most cases or all cases, again, you get about a 65-30 split on people who are supportive of, you know, women's reproductive rights. And so it's nothing new. The data tells us nothing new other than that the U.S. Supreme Court is wildly out of step, Joe.
Hey, well, followed by the Republican legislature and the Republican nominee for governor. I think this is not an original take. It's been said since the Dobbs decision, but at this point, Republicans are the dog that caught the car. Mm-hmm. They don't realize what a can of worms they have opened up among the American people who are seeing the horrifying impact that this ruling, that chucking Roe v. Wade after 50 years is doing in this country. Most recently, we're seeing this just heartbreaking story about a pregnant woman who has been told that her fetus does not have a skull that will develop, that this, you know, this pregnancy will not come to term and will not deliver a healthy addition to their family. And under the laws of the state that you know, expectant mother lives in, she cannot terminate that pregnancy, even though it has zero chance of being viable.
Yeah, the state is, you know, forcing her to go through the rest of the pregnancy and labor and everything that comes with it. And it's criminal. It's just downright criminal.
Not to mention the 16-year-old,
yes,
who state courts in Florida are saying is not mature enough to determine whether or not to have an abortion, but therefore are telling the world that they've decided that 16-year-old is mature enough to raise the child.
We mentioned that a day or so ago, and it's just unbelievable.
And here's what these stories, these horrifying stories are doing. They're moving public opinion, even among Republicans. Only 62% of Republicans at this point want to see Roe overturned. This is a problem for Republicans. It is dividing their party. And the fact that their Republican candidate for governor's name might as well be Tim, no exceptions for rape or incest, Michaels. This is a problem for them. And it should be, because it's a heinous position to take. The pre-Civil War law on the books here in Wisconsin is insulting to not just women, but everyone with a brain. And it, you know, it's going to cause political problems for them. That's not the most important thing, but it's going to be a thing.
Well, when you say what is the most important thing, it's this difference that is striking when they ask people, how concerned are you with each of the following issues? And for Democratic voters surveyed, climate, they were 79% were concerned about that. Gun violence, 77% were concerned about that. Abortion policy, 73% were concerned about that. When you go over to the Republican side, climate was the last on the list with only 6%. Coronavirus is in single digits at only 9%. Gun violence, less than half, only 45% are concerned about it. They're not polar opposites. They're not like a reverse, you know, mirror reflection, but they're really close, Joe. And obviously neither you nor I, you know, have the answers to, you know, national unity in a sense of kumbaya, but I don't recall seeing such a split in how rank and file, neighbors see policies so different from one another.
Well, yes, and we know why this is happening, and it's the information ecosystems and bubbles in which people live. Here's another way to look at those issues, you know, that issue set, though. Because we are such a 50-50 state, because so many of our elections come down to tens of thousands of votes, I was most interested in what are the top three issues among independent voters who are the most likely to be determinative in contests where both Democrats and Republicans, you know, partisans are highly engaged, highly motivated, and there's about the same number of them, right? And so the one, two, three, top three issues among independent voters, number one, inflation, number two, guns, number three, abortion. So now let's break down who are those three issues. Is that better for Republicans or better for Democrats? On the top line, inflation, listen, not great for Democrats right now, but getting better. The price of gas is falling. The Inflation Reduction Act just passed without a single Republican in Congress voting for it. This is going to lower costs on everything from energy to healthcare for the American people. So it's a Republican advantage issue, but it's not to the extent that it was before. Number two issue, guns. This is an issue that favors Democrats. Independents want to see common sense gun safety laws like red flag laws, which, not coincidentally, Tim Michaels, Republican candidate for governor, doesn't support. And frankly, doesn't even seem to understand. When this guy opens his mouth and talks to the Vicky McKennas of the world about gun safety and red flag laws, it becomes really clear really quickly. He doesn't know what he's talking about. He's reading off a sheet of what's been handed to him, and it is wildly out of step with the voters of Wisconsin. And then on the third issue, abortion, a political positive for Democrats at the moment. We have seen what happened in Kansas. We are seeing voter registration figures, you know, demonstrate the fact that women across this country, and in Wisconsin in particular, are fired up. They are angry. They do not like what the court has decided and what Republicans are fighting to enact here in Wisconsin when it comes to reproductive freedom. So I'm actually pretty comfortable with that issue set among those independent voters. And for the next 82 days, that's the most important thing, is how do we win elections for Democrats? We'll bring the country together on the 83rd day, and then we can tackle that question about unity. How's that, Pat?
There you go. I like that. On top of that, you know, with Democrats concerned about climate, I mean, they've won such a big victory in the Inflation Reduction Act, and we'll come back to that in just a sec. But before I leave the difference in parties, asked about their confidence in the results of the 2020 election. Again, by a 2-to-1 margin, roughly 66-32, overall, most respondents are either very confident or somewhat confident. About 50% are very confident. But over on the Republican side, it's almost a reverse, 37-62, where you've got, you know, 25% of Republicans saying they're not too confident. And then the biggest block is 37% of Republicans saying they're not at all confident about the results of the 2020 election. And I know you said already the thing about the media ecosystem. And to that end, I wanted to make note of something that I saw this morning that just kind of outraged me. It was, you know, Britt Hume, who, you know, I wasn't a fan at ABC, much less when he was really allowed to turn himself loose at Fox. And he writes about Liz Cheney's loss. I wonder if things might have turned out differently if she'd used her seat on the January 6th committee to insist on cross-examination of witnesses and a chance for the defense to present its side. And I, you know, my response on that on Twitter is like, every so often it's nice to get a reminder of why we created Courier Newsroom and Up North News. Otherwise, more Americans would think it is normal for newsrooms to do some sick crap like both sides of a conspiracy to overthrow U.S. elections. I mean, if Fox News had existed in the 1960s, they would insist on rebuttal witnesses for the Warren Commission. And did JFK deserve to be, you know, assassinated? It's just poisonous, Joe, what's out there. And it just gives me, you know, more reason to, you know, have programs like this with people like you.
Yeah, I'm not sure I have a ton to add there, which makes me the worst guest imaginable.
No. So, but, you know, you've listened to enough radio. Sometimes you just need somebody to say, that's right, Pat, or whoever. And then we can move on. But I just wanted to make that point that there's this tremendous disconnect in what Republicans have seen on the media and what they think of the election and the behavior that they're excusing as a result. So it's why Democrats have had to do so much on their own, except for the infrastructure bill, with not a single Republican vote to get things like the Inflation Reduction Act passed. And you've written about that a couple of times over at UpNorthNewsWI.com. I loved Barack Obama, you know, tweeting, you know, this is a BFD, and Joe Biden tweeting back, thanks, Obama. I mean, it's a well-earned victory lap.
No question. I mean, some of this, the great public policy in this legislation, like finally allowing Medicare to negotiate, to use its bulk purchasing power to get a better deal from the drug companies on prescription drugs for seniors, has been a public policy pursuit for 30 years. Joe Biden and this group of Democrats in Congress were the first ones to beat the special interests and finally move forward on lowering drug costs for seniors, not just through the negotiation, but capping costs at $2,000 a year out of pocket for seniors on Medicare. We, you know, that is an incredible win, to say nothing of the progress on climate, which will reduce carbon emissions by 40% by the end of the decade. That will, you know, promote the hiring of union, you know, American workers here in Wisconsin and across the country. That will promote the use of American-made materials in these renewable energy, you know, utility-scale projects, be they solar or wind. This is legislation that is going to pay down the deficit by hundreds of billions of dollars. There is so much good on issue after issue in this legislation, and Ron Johnson and his Republican colleagues, to a person, every single one of them said, nope, put me down on the record as a no. It's bad politics for Ron Johnson. It's bad policy for Wisconsin and the United States. It really makes you shake your head. I mean, we've talked about this in the past, but just the decision by Republicans to just say, be the Dr. No's of 2022 is just wild to me, on everything from standing up for our veterans to lowering drug costs for seniors. But they own these votes now, and they're going to have to answer for them for the next 82 days.
you know, especially the one about, you know, like you said, capping insulin costs is big. And Democrats, again, since we're all about giving them free advice, whether they listen or not, is, yeah, you're happy about the positive impact on, you know, a changing climate. But boy, really go after those jobs. That this is a jobs bill.
Yep. It's an economic stimulus package, too.
Yeah, in a big way. Joe Specky, always fun. Let's do it again real soon.
Great to see you, my friend. Have a good rest of the week, and we'll catch you on the other side.
All right. Thanks so much. We will be back after this. You're up north. Somebody was listening yesterday when I was talking up Steely Dan. So, by the way, there is a tribute band called Steely Dane, I assume based out of Dane County. It has been on my to-do list or my wish list for, I don't know, maybe 5 years, I think. But, of course, I think the one time they played up here in the Eau Claire area, I was away. And I have a feeling, Luke, this is not the kind of thing that you would go to.
I've heard of them before, and I think I may have seen them at Memorial Union, to be honest. I don't know if it was more of a, I caught the end or a portion of a show, but I did not go there for that specifically. But I believe I've seen them play at Memorial Union in the past.
I did get to see when Steely Dan and the Doobie Brothers were touring together in, was it 2017 or 2018? And they were playing in St. Paul, and that was my wife's birthday present to me. Which, of course, now it's, you know, just Donald Fagen, of course, in terms of Steely Dan. But boy, you talk about older musicians, and I see, you know, you see, let's see, Chicago has stayed together all these years. The Doobie Brothers have kind of come and gone. But my point being that while a lot of singers might lose their range after a while, if you're a good guitar player or a good horn player or a good drummer, and you can keep that skill set going, these older musicians, I mean, they are still bringing it. And I say that as a complete and total non-musician, but I used to always joke about, you know, old bands that they'd come out in their walkers, you know, and could barely play anything. And that actually, you know, if you can still put on a good show, you can put on a good show. If you're still a true showman. Now, for example, I haven't seen Rick Springfield. I saw him once at Rockfest up here in Cadott. But again, this, we're talking maybe more than 10 years ago. So I don't know if he's still bringing the show quite as strong as he was, but boy, could the guy put on a show. And that's the thing. You've got to have some talent. You've got to have some range. And maybe what ruined my view was a Fleetwood Mac appearance at Summerfest. And now we're going way back to maybe the mid 90s, you know, before when they were really kind of in a lull before all the reunion tours, and Stevie Nicks couldn't hit some of those notes to save her life. And I think, you know, since that time, maybe they stopped trying to be, you know, younger than they were anymore. But I would love to get back to Summerfest. It's been a long time since I've seen and really appreciated live music. Well, the same can be said for all of us, you know, thanks to COVID. But you're the one who, you know, you're in more of a metropolitan area, probably get exposed to more live music than I do.
What are you doing this Saturday? Because Steely Dan is playing at the Memorial Union Terrace on Saturday.
Maybe I will have to consider a trip down.
There you go.
No, I actually can't, because at some point this weekend, I will be in the Twin Cities, because at a museum, there's something called an immersive Van Gogh exhibit. Mm-hmm. And it's, again, it's my wife's idea, and I'm perfectly happy to go along. I haven't read up on it. And sometimes I don't. When something is being planned by the woman who had the courage to marry me, I sometimes just want to go in there, you know, with a complete blank slate and see what I'm going to see. But we were telling our daughters about it in a FaceTime chat, and when they heard Immersive Van Gogh, they asked if people are going to splash paint on us. And I said, I don't think it's that kind of immersive. I don't think they, you're not there with, you know, goggles and getting paint splashed on you. I think you're like going into the painting, not the process.
Yes, I believe that's correct. From what I've seen, it looks really awesome. So I hope you have a great time doing that. But it seems like there's a lot of projection of lights on walls, and you get to see the art that way. And it's everybody that I've heard went really enjoyed it. So it seems to be a really good exhibit. Otherwise, on October 20th, you could be in, or excuse me, October 14th, Friday, you could find yourself in Green Bay, and Steely Dane would also be there. Those are the next two upcoming events that Steely Dane has on their website, Pat. So,
all right. Are we becoming the official stand show for Steely Dane? Is that
on your bucket list, we got to find a way to get you there. We got to have you see a show.
I would be okay with that. We were talking earlier to Joe Zepecki about a host of issues, and including the Inflation Reduction Act. And I singled out Brit Hume for criticism about, you know, how he's covering things like the January 6th committee, and how is it that, you know, Trump continues to get more headlines. Obviously, the search of Mar-a-Lago was a big deal, but in terms of the impact on your life and in terms of landmark legislation, the Inflation Reduction Act is the true big deal. Unfortunately, as was written here by Brian Schatz, I feel like the media is having a hard time metabolizing the fact that this Congress has been historically productive. And acknowledging the size of these accomplishments and the degree of difficulty, it's just hard to do accurately without sounding a bit left-leaning. And Mark Jacob, former editor of the Chicago Tribune and Sun-Times, we had him on last week, he was looking at this New York Times headline, and the headline is analysis. For President Biden, even a victory with the climate law can hardly break through the attention on his predecessor. And Mark writes, translation, we're the New York Times, and if we write a headline centered on Biden's climate law victory, someone will call us liberal. So we'll write a headline centered on Trump instead. And that's exactly it. Is, again, it's like what, you know, Andrea Mitchell tried to do on Meet the Press this past Wednesday, is this infatuation, this obsession. They can't quit Donald Trump the way Ron Johnson can't quit Hunter Biden. It's just something that is so wrapped up in them that they won't let it go and focus on the here and now. You know, the here and now is what's getting passed, what's getting done for the American people. But instead, we have this fixation. And it's not that it's not like the coverage is all bad. We're going to hear a lot for a long time about, you know, what Donald Trump has done, the crimes that he has committed, and the people in his orbit are not going to fare well. And to that end, I'm going to close this segment with a New York Times review of Jared Kushner's new book, Breaking History. I highly recommend reading this entire thing by Dwight Garner, because it is, let me read this. Breaking History is an earnest and soulless and peculiarly selective appraisal of Donald Trump's term in office. Kushner almost entirely ignores the chaos, the alienation of allies, the breaking of laws and norms, the flirtations with dictators, all to speak about the boyish tinkering with issues he was interested in. This book is like a tour of a once majestic 18th century wooden house, now burned to its foundation, that focuses solely on and rejoices in what's left amid the ashes. Kushner's fealty to Trump remains absolute. Reading this book reminded me of watching a cat lick a dog's eye goo. That's just a little bit of the review of Jared Kushner's book. And again, you don't have to read the book, read the review. We'll be back with more after this break. You're up north.